Bienvenidos a todos nuestros oyentes. Este episodio, esta charla será en inglés debido a que es idioma de nuestro invitado. El día de hoy tenemos a Ali Jamal, founding partner de First Check Venture y tiene experiencia de más de 17 años en investing. Entonces, para los que se quieran sentir más cómodos y entender mejor la conversación, pueden visitar nuestro canal de YouTube en donde vamos a subir la entrevista completa y se encontrará con subtítulos en español. So let's start, guys. Welcome. Hi, Christina. Hi, Ali. Thanks.
Hi, thanks Diego.
To join in. So welcome. As you know, today we have Ali Jamal, founding partner at First Check Venture. Ali, you have an experience with more than 17 years and an angel investor and advisor. So thank you for accepting this invitation for this talk.
Just really excited to be here. Thank you for having me. Really glad we get a chance to chat.
Perfect. Great to have you. So I want to start with that, Ali. You almost have 20 years investing, and I want to return to your beginnings.
Yeah.
How has your decision process changed through the years when it comes to investing in a company? And how does it look like after the pandemic and all that we went through? So that's the first question. How can you tell us about?
Yeah. So, you know, I started a long time ago. And so I think at that time, I was really looking for things that were kind of close by, right? People that I knew. I wasn't really actively looking for investment. It was more, you know, having a friend or a friend of a friend who was doing something and then, you know, writing a small check here or there. You know, the process was very much local, and it had to be something that you saw. It had to be a person you knew. It had to be a person you trusted, right? Somebody you built a relationship with over 5 years. And then the investment was kind of more of just, a small thing, to back your friend. And then as I got more comfortable with the idea and more familiar with startups, I started making more direct investments, and then also participating in a bunch of different syndicates on AngelList, seeing their deal flow, get exposed to it, started to make more investments. I think the big kind of change for me was in 2017, I left San Francisco and I started moving abroad. And so, you know, it sounds weird that you leave the tech hub and it kind of, you know, gets you to like, more into tech in some ways. But I think that's really what happened. I started seeing, more interesting startups. I started to see, you know, life in other parts of the world and just kind of the natural inefficiencies that are there, I think are much more solvable and are much more interesting to a certain extent, right? So I felt like, leaving San Francisco or in San Francisco, it was a lot more like making life 10% better for 10% of the population type stuff, you know, getting pizza delivered faster or some better management of your social media or something, right? Which is, okay, interesting, but, you know, not something I really want to work on or necessarily care if it exists in the world, right? Like, I don't know if I necessarily care if I have robot make my burger or not, right? Like, if anything, I might be against it a little bit. On the other side, when you're looking at life in countries like Colombia and Mexico, it's difficult to get a bank account. It's hard to get access to your money. I even have money in my bank account and I can't get access to it now, right? Like, you just show up with like four or five forms of ID and you can't get early access to money. And every time you have to go and sit down and waste 2 hours trying to do something, trying to get apartment, what was a difficult process trying to get, I can only imagine how difficult it would be to try to buy a place, right? Like, it's just all these parts of the process are just more challenging. And so kind of living abroad, it kind of opened up my eyes to some of those things that you just kind of take for granted in the US. And that there are these problems that need to be solved all over the world, and most of the companies in the US don't know enough or don't care enough to kind of go and try to solve them. And so there are a bunch of local entrepreneurs who really understand these problems inside and out and want to go solve them and fix them. So, you know, whether that's, you know, somebody like David Velez and at Nubank or Simone from Rappi or whatever, right? There's solving real problems, right? Problems that existed before, problems even that still kind of exist, right? If you don't have their product, there aren't that many other solutions to set up a digital bank, right? Like if you want to get your groceries and you know, you need them, you don't have a car, how do you get them in you know, Bogota or Mexico City, right? It's things that are really actually kind of painful. And so having somebody come and deliver these things to you or having a bank account where you can, you know, be at home and transfer money to pay your electricity bill without having to go there in person, to me, that's pretty amazing. And it solves real life problems.
Ali, I know from this, you can say that FinTechs came to solve many of the problems that investors have right now. For you, it's more easily to invest in companies here in LATAM, in Europe, stuff like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, 20 years ago, right, it was really difficult to do some of these things, right? First off, you know, we didn't have technology like Zoom and Hangouts, and people were less familiar with it. So first off, you weren't even meeting these people. We didn't have LinkedIn for people to reach out to you or whatever, right? Or maybe we had Twitter or something, but it just wasn't really the same. So I think the first part is just, you know, I think we're all much more comfortable with technology now. But interestingly enough, I think we also have had this evolution on the paperwork side. Right. So now it's easy for a company to, or maybe not easy, but it's easier for a company to incorporate in the US. It's easier for them to have a US bank account. We now have standardized documentation, right? Like the Y Combinator safes, right? Which is a simple agreement for future equity, which is just standard terms, right? We don't need to have lawyers go back and review things back and forth. We don't need to have, all this understanding of how laws work in some other country outside of the US, you know, so even for US investors, it's much, much easier for us to invest in LATAM than it was even 5 years ago, I would say.
Sure. Ali, I like to believe that you have your favorite sectors. Which sector of companies do you like to follow in socials, in LinkedIn? Do you have any thoughts on this, or do you just like to see all the market of startups right now?
So I like to see everything, but I think the biggest thing for me is these big problems, right? These big problems that everybody has, which are painful, and that are, you know, somewhat fundamental. So for me, a lot of that ends up being, you know, ideas around kind of financial solutions. So, you know, making payments, getting your salary, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. You know, aspects around housing, right? Everybody needs a place to live. Everybody needs a roof. Everybody needs to find an apartment, rent an apartment, manage your properties. If you own properties, find a house, get a mortgage, all those sorts of things are challenging. All those big kind of problems that people have on an everyday basis, healthcare, getting access to doctors, getting access to mental health, getting access to medications, anything that can kind of make these big problems easier for people is really kind of what I try to see. So I like things that are, you know, real problems, right? So I feel like sometimes there's these problems that are a little bit more, you know, superficial, which, you know, people try to make out to be big problems, but aren't. So I'm really looking for big problems that are out there that have, you know, simple solutions, right? Like things that need to exist that are easy to understand. I don't want to have to, cancer is a huge problem in the world, right? And it's something that I hope gets solved, but I don't know enough about it to invest in somebody trying to solve it, right? It's in problems that I understand.
Hi, Ali. Sorry for cutting up there. I just had a really interesting follow-up, I think, question, because, you know, you were mentioning about big problems. And as I see it right now, you know, angels, investment funds, everyone is looking for big problems. Yeah. Because then you have more target markets, right? Do you see the switch, you know, from US being these huge monsters of startups now, maybe LATAM being, or maybe India, you know, you have so many interesting ecosystems and new markets. Do you see maybe at some point that we will get a big breakthrough between, you know, LATAM or maybe even India, or, you know, who knows, a new market coming up, popping up and saying, you know what, now we have these huge markets. Now we might be even over, being even bigger than the States, for example.
Yeah. So I think that's already happening in some aspects, right? Some like companies like, you know, again, Nubank, right? Nubank is a huge company, and they, in a lot of ways, are probably setting the pace for what a neobank should look like or be. I think when we start thinking about it kind of on a bigger picture, and I think what you mean is, are there, like, right now, a lot of these companies are kind of helping these countries become self-sufficient, right? So you don't need to rely on an outside service to kind of provide it, or something from the US to kind of provide it. And the question is that, can you kind of make that switch from, you know, becoming self-reliant to then kind of exporting, and then exporting kind of globally? So, you know, we see some of these companies, right, like have moved from, you know, Brazil to Mexico and then to Colombia, right? So they're starting to export kind of the idea or the concept of the project within Latin America. And I think that there are opportunities to start to take some of those things and bring them to, you know, Europe, or to bring them to India, or to bring them to the Middle East, and you know, same the other way, right? So we have seen companies like Didi, right, jump from China to Latin America as well. So I think we will see specific companies, specific industries start to get really big and really important in specific markets. And, you know, we kind of saw this historically. I previously worked kind of in the video game industry, and one of the big areas for kind of video games and mobile technology is actually Finland. And what happened was, you know, there was a couple of big like mobile companies there, like Nokia. And then when those companies, like, they started an ecosystem, and those people have spun off from that ecosystem, then kind of continued to develop and start to kind of build the expertise. And so, you know, we talk about kind of these mafia groups, right? Like, and not in the negative sense, but in the positive sense, right? The PayPal mafia is kind of the classic example. And so when you start to look at, Rappi, or you start to look at Kabak, or you start to look at some of these companies, right? They are starting to spin up their own mafias, right? They're starting to spin up and support the ecosystem. And, you know, as, you know, the Rappi model is, you know, sort of B2C and you know, marketplaces. And so, you know, people kind of are focusing a lot on that in Latin America. But as we get kind of more niche companies doing really well, I think we definitely could see the exportation of something if, you know, the companies in LATAM have created an ecosystem around it that is better than in other markets.
Yeah, and that's also what we wanted to do here at Bigma. Like, we don't want to play alone. We want to play with the ecosystem. We want to, you know, grow together. And that's something that we're betting on. You know, so far we have focused more on the investment side and ecosystem and markets. But there is something that all of our founders want to hear, and is, What is important for you when starting a new relationship with a founder? What do you consider that is important, and what do you look for when you're considering to invest in a founder? So we're switching a bit topics, but it's also quite important question.
Yeah. I want to see the passion, right? I want to understand why this is important to you, why this is a big problem that you're solving. I want to understand like how important it is, right? So, what have you done to make this thing a reality? Why are you kind of the person to build it? So is this something that you have intimate knowledge of? Is this something you're expert in? Even if you weren't an expert, you know, a year ago, 6 months ago, have you put all the effort in, over the last 6 months or over the last year to show that this is the thing that you really care about, you really want to build? I often have conversations with people pretty early. We are first check ventures. So, you know, I want to be the first check in, but oftentimes I find people aren't really ready yet for that first check. And so I often kind of try to build the relationship with them over, you know, several months of kind of understanding, you know, are you hitting your goals? Are you building the right thing? What does the early feedback look like from the market? All those sorts of things. And you know, the more that you can kind of prove out some of those points, the more exciting it is for me and the more likely I am to invest.
You really build long-term relationship with your founders. That's what you're looking for. Not one exchange, but really that you are there for them like along the way, basically.
Yeah. And you know, we often invest in the founders more than once. You know, mm-hmm. I think all of them on WhatsApp. We're texting kind of throughout, you know, the week or throughout the month, right? Like, you know, they don't need me every day. Like, it'd be, you know, strange if they did. But, you know, I do try to be a resource. And so often, you know, once a month, once every 6 weeks, they'll text me a question or two, right? And I can respond pretty quickly. And, you know, if I could be helpful, I could be helpful. Maybe it's they need an introduction to a VC. Maybe it's they have a specific question on their marketing strategy, or they want me to sit down with their product leader or whatever, right? So there's kind of a variety of different skill sets that I bring to the table. I'm backing the founder to build something meaningful. And so I want to help them as much as I can.
Yeah, sure. And talking about also this relationship between, angels and founders, VCs. For example, you already talked some benefits that you have. You only not have the money. You have more than the money. So, for example, Ali, if I'm a CEO of a company, getting an investing from you or first check venture, how can companies succeed in leveraging you the most in terms of getting much more than just the money? And also, how do you get most out of this relationship between founders and VCs?
So I think one of the big things is kind of recognizing where you need help and asking for that help, right? And so it's really easy if you ask for one or two very specific things for me to be yes or no and me be able to help you. I think, you know, oftentimes the founders either don't ask for help or they ask for help too generically. And then, you know, it's hard for me to do that, right? If you just say, oh, hey, can you introduce me to other investors? It's like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'll do my best. But if you were like, hey, can you introduce me to blah, blah, blah from firm XYZ, then it's a much easier thing for me to say, yeah, of course, I know that guy really well. I know that girl really well. Or, you know, I don't know them so well, but let me see if they're open to it, right? And get that feedback. So if you have a specific thing, like it's much easier for people to respond. If you just say, hey, we're looking for, you know, more people to hire. Okay, that, so is everybody else. If you say, hey, we're looking for, you know, a new, you know, data scientist with 5 years of experience that's living in Mexico City, that's a much narrower focus that I could really start to kind of dig in and think about very quickly. So I think one of the big things that founder have to realize is that, like, you know, we do want to be helpful, but, you know, and it's also not just me, right? But we also have a syndicate, so there's other LPs. And so if you have a specific request, you know, they're much more likely to be able to respond or to know what, you know, what you need help with. If you leave it as a generic thing, you know, like, oh, we welcome all the help we could get, it's just, you know, a little bit hard for people to actually be helpful.
Yeah, that's great, because you are not only delivering money, you're only also delivering much more than that. And that's great news for much a lot of founders that wants more than just the funding. Great, Ali. Now, returning to fintechs, I want to look over some news that we share in our social. And also, I'm going to take this opportunity to announce that from now on, in Figma, we are going to start sharing more VCs news. Let's talk about this news that Better Tomorrow Ventures just shared. They say that the fintech startups are in serious trouble. They say fintech probably grew the fastest in the last 2 years in terms of valuation. And Shield Mognot, that is the GP of this company, say that as we reset to how it was a few years ago, fintech has the farthest to fall in terms of valuation. What do you think about these statements? Do you see that the fintech sector is in danger, or can we expect a fall in their valuations? What do you think?
Well, I think it could be both, right? I think, or neither. I think it's fintech valuations have gone up quite a bit, right? And I think the scarier part is less about the valuations and more about the multiples, right? So what is the underlying aspects that are kind of guiding these valuations? And so I think over the last 5 years, we've seen this, you know, kind of transition away from valuing, you know, multiples and looking at these things in kind of a way that makes sense. And so I think there is a chance that, you know, some of these fintech valuations fall. But at the same time, I don't know if that's necessarily like the worst thing in the world. I don't know if they're going to necessarily need to lay off a bunch of people or anything like that. I think that you can have your valuation fall and still, you know, go towards your goal. Because at the end of the day, it wasn't really necessarily a question of, you know, of reaching the next valuation, right? Like, that shouldn't be your goal as a company. It should be continue to grow to reach the next levels of profitability, to reach the next, you know, having the biggest customer impact, to reaching the most customers. And that, if that's still your goal, right? Like, maybe you kind of reprioritize which of these goals you focus on in which order. So maybe you focus on making sure you're profitable or break even at a faster point than you were initially. But it's definitely not like a positive thing that valuations are falling. But I don't think it needs to mean that, like, oh, you can't invest in fintechs or all your fintech investments are going to be zero. You know, there's going to be an adjustment. I don't know how big that adjustment is going to be, right? Like, we have this tendency to get over hot and over cold, then we kind of get back to being lukewarm and then warm and then overheat again, right? So this is kind of just cyclical in nature. I think everybody's kind of looking at things as this is going to be the worst, you know, thing ever, and we're going to be in a recession for a decade or something, and that's not going to happen, right? So some of these companies that raised at very, very crazy valuations, you know, it might take them a while to build into that valuation in all reality. But if you raise the money and you can save your capital, right, then they could come out of this even better in the end, right? Because they're making better decisions for their business.
That's great insight that you just have shared, Ali. We have seen some recent developments in the VC industry. right? So talk us about what developments do you think right now is the better to implement in a VC company, and which one are you implementing in First Check Ventures?
So, you know, I think in general, right, there's been a explosion in the industry. And so I think that's created a lot of really great opportunities. And I think one of the really interesting things is there are now more and more companies even in your back door, right? As a venture-backed company in Mexico, in Colombia, in Brazil, in Argentina, you have other companies in your own country now that are much more helpful and much more able to help you. And so I think we're seeing a lot of collaboration and opportunities for, you know, companies to work together. You know, so one of the companies in my portfolio is Plurk, right? They make it easier for companies to offer benefits, especially in Latin American countries. So, you know, that's a huge opportunity for a new startup, right? Instead of having to build up your own benefits program internally, you can use a program like that. Or I'm an investor in Castor, which gives people early access to wages, right? And that can be a benefit that companies can offer their employees. And so, you know, there's that's something that didn't really exist, right? You know, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, that now exists, that you can go and tap into these other companies in the market, grow with them, offer them as unique perks and benefits to your own customers, to your own employees, right? And it's just start to make life easier, right? So I think that's something to kind of think about now, is just that the ecosystem can be more self-sufficient, right? And you can help out another local company and they can offer benefits that you need that, you know, weren't available, you know, to people a year or two ago.
Yes. No, I was just thinking still on the founder side, because I think that's something that they always want to hear. They always want to know, okay, how to make a good impression, you know, with an angel, with a VC. So I just want to follow that line and maybe just ask you one more question around that. And it's more like, what separates the founders that you have invested from the ones that you haven't invested? I mean, you spoke about passion, and I know that's important. But I also know that, you know, having a good team, that, for example, the deck always is something that you're looking for. Is that something really that it's like a must for you, or can you invest in someone, you know, even if these things are, for example, lacking or it could be improved?
So ultimately, right, the deck is how you're communicating your idea with the outside world. And so it kind of becomes a representation of like, how clear are you in your thoughts of what you're building? How well do you understand the ecosystem, right? When I look at your competitor slide, are you showing all the competitors? Are you leaving out somebody obvious, right? If you're leaving out somebody obvious, that kind of indicates that maybe you don't know the space as well as you think you do. You know, when you're looking at, and when you're showing your traction, right? Do you really understand your numbers? Do you really understand what numbers are important to look at? Right? There's all these different kind of components to it about why something like a deck might be important. Now, not every company I've invested in has had a deck, or, you know, there's always the exception to the rule. But, you know, I would say, you know, that you shouldn't try to be the exception to the rule, follow the rule, right? Like, try to build something that can clearly state what you're building, why you're building it. And, you know, the other thing to kind of keep in mind is, you know, I'm just a small part of your journey, right? There's going to need to be other investors who join in. I'm not going to be able to fund you from, you know, an idea all the way to unicorn status. You're going to need to get other people to invest along the way. And so they're most likely going to want to see a deck, right? I've never heard of a company raising a $200 million round without, you know, without a deck, right? At some point, you're going to need to have a deck. And so why not start early, right? Why not put your thoughts down on paper now? Why not get everything together? And part of this, you know, question for me is also not just, are you a company that I want to back or that I want to like that I want to exist, but is this also a company that other people are going to want to invest in? Is this something that a VC is going to want to invest in, or other angels are going to want to invest in, right? And you're probably going to need some of that information in order for it to really happen.
So I have three key things that you mentioned. Yeah. For the founders that are listening. So one is passion. We are definitely looking for someone that is passionate, that really wants to solve a problem, hopefully a big one, but someone that is passionate. So you want to build a long-term relationship with them, so making sure that it's not something that is just transactional, but you actually are going to build something with them together. And the third thing is their reputation. So you want to make sure that, of course, other people also want to do business with them.
Yeah.
So that I think it's quite interesting, you know, to have these three things. I know a lot of them have passion, but then, you know, when it comes to, for example, the long-term relationship, to actually build things, to have that consistency, I think sometimes founder might lack. You know, they have a lot of passion, but then when they see they have to work a lot, then the motivation can be reduced a bit. So is that, you know, having that consistency along the years that differentiates maybe good founders between bad founders?
Yeah. And, you know, maybe let's take a step back. So, you know, I want to build a relationship with you, but I'm not, you know, trying to be at your wedding or, you know, be your drinking buddy or something like that. Right. Like I am, you know, trying to understand you more as a person. Are you somebody who says they're going to do something and then that thing gets done? Mm-hmm. How well do you understand your company and your product? Right. Like when you tell me we're going to sell 10,000 widgets next month, do you sell 10,000 widgets next month, you know, or do you sell 8,000 or do you sell 15,000? Right. And, you know, how well do you understand what's actually happening with your business? That's why I want to build this relationship with you, right? Like I want to build this relationship to understand, you know, how good are you as a leader? How smart are you with understanding your product? You know, how, again, with this passion, right? But it's not just the passion. It's the ability to turn that passion along with your understanding of what's happening and building something that's meaningful. And so seeing somebody who is continuously kind of growing, continuously getting better, improving themselves, improving the business, that to me is the exciting part, right? So when I say build a relationship, right? Like it is ultimately a relationship where you know, you're trying to get my money. So don't like act like, you know, we're trying to be best friends. Like we're not really trying to be best friends, right? Like, we're it's a business relationship that we're trying to work on and build. And, you know, we're trying to be professionals about it. You know, the whole idea of this thing is building up your track record, building up some reason why I can trust that what you say is going to be real kind of going forward.
Yeah. And now that you mentioned trust, you know, we were in the BC panel last week in Pigma, and that there was something that it was mentioned about, you know, getting introduced by maybe an accelerator, maybe if you have already been through a program, you know, that's a good way to meet a founder. Is that the same with you? Because I know someone mentioned it back last week, but is that something that is also important for you? Or how do you, when you see a new founder that wants to get your attention or he wants to communicate with you, do you also maybe prefer that they come with from a program, or do you actually check everything that is coming through your inbox?
I try to at least look at everything that's coming through my inbox. I don't always get a chance to respond. I try to respond to as much as I can, but it's just a lot. And the thing is that if you get introduced through somebody who I know well and who I trust well, mm-hmm. right, and they vouch for you, then that to me is going to make sure that I respond, right? It's going to make sure that I, you know, at least, you know, think about it a second time and maybe schedule a meeting. So, you know, don't randomly email people that I know and ask them to like make an introduction. That's not that helpful, right? Because the first question I ask them is like, oh, well, how well do you know this guy? Is this a company you want to invest in? And if they say no to both of those things, or they say, I don't know them and I don't really want to invest in them, you just ask for an introduction, so I pass it on. It didn't really do you that much good, right? So if it's somebody who you're close with, like your former boss or you know, an investor who's already coming in, and they could be like, hey, we already invested X amount. This is the best founder I've seen in the last 5 years, or, you know, this is a space that I think is really exciting for XYZ, and they could add more of that color. The introduction is much more helpful than, you know, going direct. But, you know, think about how warm these warm intros are really going to be, because if it's, you know, not really that warm, it doesn't really do you that much good.
Yeah, so you still prefer that it's coming from someone, but it's not just like a lead or something that is coming through, but it's actually, you know, it has a purpose, and then they probably already meet each other, and so they know as well. They also have a relationship. You're about relationships.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to try to work the warm intro, then make sure it's actually warm. If you want to just cold reach out, then you can cold reach out. You know, but don't waste somebody else's time because you're trying to like get to me, right? Like that makes me feel even worse, right? Like if you waste somebody else's time, somebody else has to respond to you, somebody else has to forward your stuff, just reach out directly. But if you do have somebody who you know who's, mm-hmm. you know, a founder in my portfolio or who's a co-investor in some of these deals, you know, that would be the way to go. Like, you know, I'm much more likely to, like I said, the founders and I chat, you know, pretty regularly. If they're sending me something and they're excited by it, I'm going to take a second look.
Yep. Now, because we're running a bit out of time, but I want to ask you two questions regarding the LATAM ecosystem, now that you are, of course, also experiencing it. So the first one is, what are your bets for the LATAM startup ecosystem? And I'm going to put up a time frame, so the next 5 years. Where do you see the explosion, the next startups coming? And please don't tell me fintech, please, something new.
So, you know, I think that there's a lot of opportunities within LATAM, and a lot of, you know, listen, Mike, there's a lot of inefficiencies, right? Like when you're like everything you're trying to do just takes a little bit longer than it would in the US, and it's just a little bit more inefficient. You know, I think one of the big things to kind of think about is kind of, you know, what's happening globally as well. Part of the reason why we're having this recession is some of these political things that are happening, you know, war and things of that nature. And that also has a ripple effect kind of across LATAM. You know, earlier this year, you know, we were seeing a lot of stuff about political elections that were happening across LATAM, whether that was, you know, Peru or Brazil or Colombia. And so I think that there are a lot of things that Latin America that aren't issues as much in other places. And so things that kind of go about trying to solve some of these inherent instabilities, I think are going to be a big part going forward. So the obvious one that kind of jumps to mind is you know, things around the blockchain, things around, you know, kind of having decentralized or things non-centralized outside of your home country, where you don't have to worry about the political landscape of what's happening locally. You know, I think that's probably going to be a big thing. Again, you know, like there's a lot of these kind of basic needs that still need to be met. And you know, some of the solutions would probably be considered fintech. some of them might be considered prop tech, right? So getting access to housing. Getting access to housing easier, getting access to more you know, apartments and mortgages, blah, blah, blah. It's partially fintech, but it's partially other things. Latin American population is really young. We're seeing, you know, more and more people needing access to education and how education evolves, right? And what that means. You know, we're seeing more and more tech emerge. So, you know, do people get access to more technical training and get access to more, you know, training programs and boot camps? And what does that process look like for, you know, people that, you know, are you know, no longer in school? What kind of programs do they do? Or for people who can't afford to go to a four-year college, right? What kind of opportunities are available to them? So I think there's a lot of potential opportunities for impact. I don't know which ones are going to really take off. And you know, again, I think part of it is you have one company that kind of takes off, and then that kind of creates that ecosystem around that culture and that opportunity, right? So I think, you know, we're going to start to see, you know, new alumni networks, new kind of mafias emerge, and based on what they saw with their previous jobs and what they saw with the previous companies, you know, I think will help kind of dictate what the future looks like a lot.
Yeah, I was thinking also on prop tech when you mentioned it, but also education, like you were mentioning boot camps, but how to really improve the processes, how to make it even better. You know, education as we know it, I think it's gonna change a lot. How, we're gonna see. Those were really interesting points. And then the next question is around, you know, improvements in the LATAM ecosystem, because I know we're doing things in a good way, I will say, but I must admit that we, of course, we're a long way, for example, from US or maybe even Europe. Like, which improvements do you see in the LATAM ecosystem that we could start doing?
So I think we're starting to see a lot of stuff around us already. But, you know, again, I think historically there weren't, each country was kind of on its own, or each country was kind of independent, and each one kind of had its own identity. And so we weren't seeing as many companies, you know, be able to expand, to be able to launch into other markets. I think over the last few years, we started seeing more of that. I think part of the reason why it was difficult to expand was just legally, there were challenges in setting up different corporations and setting up different whatever. New bank accounts. I start think, you know, fintech kind of lays the layer down for a lot of these other things to then kind of emerge on top of that, which is kind of why I think it's the fact that LATAM had a lot of investments in fintech over the last couple of years isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think it kind of lays the pipes down for everything else to be built on top of that going forward. I think we're going to see kind of a lot of stuff changed within this kind of future of work and what work looks like, right? I think a lot of people reevaluated life kind of during the pandemic and you know, how do they kind of choose to think about where they live, how they live, you know, who they live with. I think we're going to see a lot more kind of co-living opportunities emerge and transitory things and more remote first jobs and you know, how that ends up impacting cities and how that ends up impacting, you know, other places out there, how that ends up impacting travel, right? I think it's going to be a lot of changes kind of across the ecosystem. So I think those are kind of the big things that I'm kind of thinking about a lot. And then, you know, I think just like, you know, we started to see standardization of some of these legal forms and now kind of more standardization of bank accounts. The next steps in standardization, right? The next steps in kind of being able to easily hire employees, be able to easily move your pension from, you know, Colombia to Peru and from, you know, Mexico to Colombia. Like, the easier it is to kind of transition and move from one place to another, I think it's going to be the better for the ecosystem, but better for, you know, all these countries, right? Because then everybody's kind of moving around. It creates more opportunities for everybody.
Great. Now, Ali, we are running out of time. So we are going to do a quick dynamic. So we have five quick questions. You got to answer these ones shortly and concise. So you have to be really, really specific. So let's start. First one, which of your investments do you like most and why?
So it's kind of always your firstborn, right? So my firstborn was in a startup called Yummy. They were a Venezuelan super app. They're now across LATAM. And they've, one, they kind of taken off. Two, it was like one of those investments where everybody else thought I was crazy for making it. Like, and you know, now the company's continued to grow. They're now in 7 or 8 different countries in LATAM. They're offering more and more services. And, it's people no longer think I'm crazy for making that investment. So that was kind of cool.
Choose one startup that you admire and say why.
There's a bunch. I'm trying to think of one that really, I really like Amazon. I think they've built a really interesting platform and they've expanded out in all these different ways, both B2C, B2B, new cutting edge services. They have, their venture capital component. I think they're doing a lot of interesting things there. I think they consistently hire a lot of top talent and train them well. There's a big emphasis on kind of cutting out the BS and making things as efficient as possible. I haven't been part of the culture, so I can't say everything that they do, but from what I understand, it's a really fast moving and interesting place to be.
According to you, which startup is the most promising in your portfolio?
I mean, I think they all are, right? Like that's why I invested. I don't know. There's different ways of looking at that, right? And so, on one hand, you can look at what's kind of reached the furthest in a period of time, or like what has the biggest potential if it actually succeeds. So it's kind of hard for me to say right now. I mean, most of my portfolio is so early. There's a lot of things that look really interesting.
So I have one bonus question because you mentioned that you liked gaming at the beginning. So I'm just quite interested what about the gaming industry? Are you following the gaming industry? I think it's quite interesting, to be honest. It's growing a lot with the streaming and all of that. So what are your thoughts on the gaming industry? And that was a bonus. Sorry for that, but I just wanted to know.
No. The thing that's complicated about the gaming industry, and it's actually true about like anything kind of entertainment, is it's hard to know if you have like product market fit while you're in development, right? So nobody knows if the next movie that's coming out is going to be huge or everybody's going to hate it, right? And there's plenty of times where people think they're making a good movie or a good game and then nobody else likes it. And so as an investor, it's kind of challenging because you're not just making a small bet, right? Like you have to like fund the whole thing, have it ready to go, have it shipped, and then you find out if people like it. I tend to invest a lot more in things where you can have an MVP, you can see if people like it in a small ecosystem, you get that initial feedback, you can make changes, you can edit it, you can move it, and then it kind of continues to grow. So I'm really fascinated by the gaming industry. There's a lot of different components to it that I definitely am excited by, but it's a little hard for me to really feel comfortable investing because of the kind of, hit or aspect of it.
And finally, mention one lesson that LATAM can avoid from USA experience?
So I think, you know, because LATAM ecosystem is still, you know, very young and evolving, they haven't had the same kind of Silicon Valley, you know, burst like they did like earlier, right? Where even though some of these companies are kind of being devalued, it wasn't that big of a crazy drop. So I think the key lesson takeaway is like just continue to build things that have kind of real customer adoption, that have real people liking it, and kind of build some of that people want. You know, I think there's a lot of case studies in the US of people building things that people don't want, right? And so try to avoid that, right? And maybe that sounds simpler than it is, but you know, again, get an MVP, get people to try it out, get feedback from people who aren't related to you or who aren't your friends or whatever, right? Go sit down randomly with somebody, show them what you're building and see if they get excited by it.
Well, thank you, Ali. We have come to the end, but we really appreciated that you came and that, of course, all of your points. It was really nice meeting you and that you came and that you came also to our BC panel last week. So yeah, just we're gonna for sure stay connected with you, and we're gonna invite you to for more of these, hopefully with more angels, more VCs. So thanks for joining us. Now hemos llegado al final de nuestro podcast con Ali Jamal. Gracias, Ali. Recuerden seguirnos en nuestras redes sociales como Pigma Startups. También es muy importante que se unan a nuestro Discord, en donde tenemos eventos muy, muy buenos, brutales, de gran ayuda para toda nuestra comunidad, y donde tendremos, obviamente, más invitados como lo tuvimos hoy. Y pues, como lo saben, es un espacio con la suficiente ayuda para ustedes, para su negocio, su empresa, y para que puedan seguir al siguiente nivel. Así que no se olviden de seguirnos en nuestras redes. Y thank you, Ali, one more time.